The chief mate of the Pequod was Starbuck, a native of Nantucket and a Quaker by descent. He was a long, earnest man, and though born on an icy coast, seemed well adapted to endure hot latitudes, his flesh being hard as twice-baked biscuit. Transported to the Indies, his live blood would not spoil like bottled ale. He was by no means ill-looking, quite the contrary. His pure, tight skin was an excellent fit, and closely wrapped up in it, and embalmed with inner health and strength like a revivified Egyptian, this Starbuck seemed prepared to endure for long ages to come, and to endure always as now. For be it polar snow or torrid sun, like a patent chronometer, his interior vitality was warranted to do well in all climates. Looking into his eyes, you seemed to see there the yet lingering images of those thousandfold perils he had calmly confronted through life. Starbuck was no crusader after perils. In him, courage was not a sentiment, but a thing simply useful to him, and always at hand upon all mortally practical occasions. Besides, he thought, perhaps that in this business of whaling, courage was one of the great staple outfits of the ship, like her beef and her bread, and not to be foolishly wasted. Wherefore he had no fancy for lowering for whales after sundown, nor for persisting in fighting a fish that too much persisted in fighting him. For, thought Starbuck, I am here in this critical ocean to kill whales for my living, and not to be killed by them for theirs. Stubb was the second mate. He was a native of Cape Cod, and hence, according to local usage, was called a Cape Cod man. Good-humored, easy, and careless, he presided over his whale boat as if the most deadly encounter were but a dinner, and his crew all invited guests. He was as particular about the comfortable arrangements of his part of the boat as an old stage driver is about the snugness of his box. When close to the whale, in the very deathlock of the fight, he handled his unpitying lance coolly and offhandedly, as a whistling tinker his hammer. He would hum over his old rigadig tunes while flank in flank with the most exasperated monster. Long usage had for the stub converted the jaws of death into an easy chair. What he thought of death itself, there is no telling. The third mate was Flask, a native of Tisbury in Martha's Vineyard. A short, stout, ruddy young fellow, very pugnacious concerning whales, who somehow seemed to think that the great leviathans had personally and hereditarily affronted him, and therefore it was a sort of point of honor with him to destroy them whenever encountered. As a carpenter's nails are divided into wrought nails and cut nails, so mankind may be similarly divided. Little Flask was one of the wrought ones, made to clinch tight and last long. They called him King Post on board of the Pequod, because in form he could be well likened to the short, square timber known by that name in Arctic whalers, and which, by the means of many radiating side timbers inserted into it, serves to brace the ship against the icy concussions of those battering seas. Now these three mates, Starbuck, Stubb, and Flask, were momentous men. They it was who by universal prescription commanded three of the Pequod's boats as headsmen. In that grand order of battle in which Captain Ahab would probably marshal his forces to descend on the whales, these three headsmen were as captains of companies. Or, being armed with their long, keen whaling spears, they were as a picked trio of lancers, even as the harpooners were flingers of javelins. And since in this famous fishery, each mate or headsman, like a Gothic knight of old, is always accompanied by his boat steerer or harpooner, who in certain conjunctures provides him with a fresh lance, when the former one has been badly twisted or elbowed in the salt. And moreover, as there generally subsists between the two a close intimacy and friendliness, it is therefore but meet that in this place we set down who the Pequod's harpooners were and to what headsman each of them belonged. First of all was Queequeg, whom Starbuck, the chief mate, had selected for his squire, but Queequeg is already known. Next was Tashtego, an unmixed Indian from Gay Head, the most westerly promontory of Martha's Vineyard. Tashtego's long, lean, sable hair, his high cheekbones and black rounding eyes, for an Indian, oriental in their largeness, but Antarctic in their glittering expression, all this sufficiently proclaimed him an inheritor of the unvitiated blood of those proud warrior hunters who, in quest of the great New England moose, had scoured bow in hand, the aboriginal forests of the Maine. Third among the harpooners was Dagoo, a gigantic, coal-black Negro savage with a lion-like tread. Dagoo retained all his barbaric virtues, and erect as a giraffe, moved about on the decks in all the pomp of 6'5" in his socks. There was a corporeal humility in looking up at him, and a white man standing before him seemed a white flag come to beg truce of a fortress. Curious to tell, this imperial negro, Ahasuerus Dagoo, was squire of Little Flask, who looked like a chessman beside him.